24 July 1912. Talk to Theosophical Society, The Kensington, Exeter and Boylston Streets, Boston, Massachusetts. Notes by Edna McKinney. In the world of existence, there is nothing so important as spirit, nothing so essential as the spirit of man. The spirit of man is the most noble of phenomena. The spirit of man is the meeting between man and God. The spirit of man is the animus of human life and the collective center of all human virtues. The spirit of man is the cause of the illumination of this world. The world may be likened to the body. Man is the spirit of the body, because the light of the world is the human spirit. Man is the life of the world, and the life of man is the spirit. The happiness of the world depends upon man, and the happiness of man is dependent upon the spirit. The world may be likened to the lamp chimney, whereas man is the light. Man himself may be likened to the lamp. His spirit is the light within the lamp. Therefore, we will speak of this spirit. The philosophers of the world are divided into two classes: materialists, who deny the spirit and its immortality, and the divine philosophers, the wise men of God, the true Illuminati, who believe in the spirit and its continuance hereafter. The ancient philosophers taught that man consists simply of the material elements which compose his cellular structure, and that when this composition is disintegrated, the life of man becomes extinct. They reasoned that man is body only, and from this elemental composition, the organs and their functions, the senses, powers, and attributes which characterize man have proceeded, and that these disappear completely with the physical body. This is practically the statement of all the materialists. The divine philosophers proclaim that the spirit of man is ever living and eternal, and because of the objections of the materialists, these wise men of God have advanced rational proofs to support the validity of their statement. Inasmuch as the materialistic philosophers deny the books of God, scriptural demonstration is not evidence to them, and materialistic proofs are necessary. Answering them, the men of divine knowledge have said that all existing phenomena may be resolved into grades or kingdoms, classified progressively as mineral, vegetable, animal, and human, each of which possesses its degree of function and intelligence. When we consider the mineral, we find that it exists and is possessed of the power of affinity or combination. The vegetable possesses the qualities of the mineral plus the augmentative virtue or power of growth. It is therefore evident that the vegetable kingdom is superior to the mineral. The animal kingdom, in turn, possesses the qualities of the mineral and the vegetable, plus the five senses of perception, whereof the kingdoms below it are lacking. Likewise, the power of memory inherent in the animal does not exist in the lower kingdoms. Just as the animal is more noble than the vegetable and mineral, so man is superior to the animal. The animal is bereft of ideality. That is to say, it is a captive of the world of nature and not in touch with that which lies within and beyond nature. It is without spiritual susceptibilities, deprived of the attractions of consciousness, unconscious of the world of God, and incapable of deviating from the law of nature. It is different with man. Man is possessed of the emanations of consciousness. He has perception, ideality, and is capable of discovering the mysteries of the universe. All the industries, inventions, and facilities surrounding our daily life were at one time hidden secrets of nature, but the reality of man penetrated them and made them subject to his purposes. According to nature's laws, they should have remained latent and hidden. But man, having transcended those laws, discovered these mysteries and brought them out of the plane of the invisible into the realm of the known and visible. How wonderful is the spirit of man! One of the mysteries of natural phenomena is electricity. Man has discovered this illimitable power and made it captive to his uses. How many of nature's secrets have been penetrated and revealed? Columbus, while in Spain, discovered America. Man has accurately determined that the sun is stationary while the earth revolves about it. The animal cannot do this. Man perceives the mirage to be an illusion. This is beyond the power of the animal. The animal can only know through sense impressions and cannot grasp intellectual realities. The animal cannot conceive of the power of thought. This is an abstract intellectual matter and not limited to the senses. The animal is incapable of knowing that the earth is round. In brief, abstract intellectual phenomena are human powers. All creation below the kingdom of man is the captive of nature. It cannot deviate in the slightest degree from nature's laws. But man wrests the sword of dominion from nature's hand and uses it upon nature's head. For example, it is a natural exigency that man should be a dweller upon the earth. But the power of the human spirit transcends this limitation, and he soars aloft in airplanes. This is contrary to the law and requirement of nature. He sails at high speed upon the ocean and dives beneath its surface in submarines. He imprisons the human voice in a phonograph and communicates in the twinkling of an eye from east to west. These are things we know to be contrary to the limitations of natural law. Man transcends nature, while the mineral, vegetable, and animal are helplessly subject to it. This can be done only through the power of the Spirit, because the Spirit is the reality. In the physical powers and senses, however, man and the animal are partners. In fact, the animal is often superior to man in sense perception. For instance, the vision of some animals is exceedingly keen, and the hearing of others most acute. Consider the instinct of a dog, how much greater than that of man. But although the animal shares with man all the physical virtues and senses, a spiritual power has been bestowed upon man of which the animal is devoid. This is a proof that there is something in man above and beyond the endowment of the animal, a faculty and virtue peculiar to the human kingdom, which is lacking in the lower kingdoms of existence. This is the spirit of man. All these wonderful human accomplishments are due to the efficacy and penetrating power of the spirit of man. If man were bereft of this spirit, none of these accomplishments would have been possible. This is as evident as the sun at midday. All the organisms of material creation are limited to an image or form. That is to say, each created material being is possessed of a form. It cannot possess two forms at the same time. For example, a body may be spherical, triangular, or square, but it is impossible for it to be two of these shapes simultaneously. It may be triangular, but if it is to become square, it must first rid itself of the triangular shape. It is absolutely impossible for it to be both at the same time. Therefore, it is evident in the reality of material organisms that different forms cannot be simultaneously possessed. In the spiritual reality of man, however, all geometrical figures can be simultaneously conceived. While in physical realities, one image must be forsaken in order that another may be possible. This is the law of change and transformation, and change and transformation are precursors of mortality. Were it not for this change in form, phenomena would be immortal. But because the phenomenal existence is subject to transformation, it is mortal. The reality of man, however, is possessed of all virtues. It is not necessary for him to give up one image for another as mere physical bodies do. Therefore, in that reality, there is no change or transformation. It is immortal and everlasting. The body of a man may be in America, while his spirit is laboring and working in the Far East, discovering, organizing, and planning. While occupied in governing, making laws, and erecting a building in Russia, his body is still here in America. What is this power which, notwithstanding that it is embodied in America, is operating at the same time in the Orient, organizing, destroying, upbuilding? It is the spirit of man. This is irrefutable. When you wish to reflect upon or consider a matter, you consult something within you. You say, shall I do it or shall I not do it? Is it better to make this journey or abandon it? Whom do you consult? Who is within you deciding this question? Surely there is a distinct power, an intelligent ego. Were it not distinct from your ego, you would not be consulting it. It is greater than the faculty of thought. It is your spirit which teaches you, which advises and decides upon matters. Who is it that interrogates? Who is it that answers? There is no doubt that it is the spirit, and that there is no change or transformation in it, for it is not a composition of elements, and anything that is not composed of elements is eternal. Change and transformation are peculiarities of composition. There is no change and transformation in the spirit. In proof of this, the body may become weakened in its members. It may be dismembered, or one of its members may be incapacitated. The whole body may be paralyzed, and yet the mind, the spirit, remains ever the same. The mind decides. The thought is perfect, and yet the hand is withered. The feet have become useless. The spinal column is paralyzed, and there is no muscular movement at all, but the spirit is in the same status. Dismember a healthy man. The spirit is not dismembered. Amputate his feet. His spirit is there. He may become lame. The spirit is not affected. The spirit is ever the same. No change or transformation can you perceive. And because there is no change or transformation, it is everlasting and permanent. Consider man while in the state of sleep. It is evident that all his parts and members are at a standstill, are functionless. His eye does not see. His ear does not hear. His feet and hands are motionless. But, nevertheless, he does see in the world of dreams. He does hear. He speaks. He walks. He may even fly in an airplane. Therefore, it becomes evident that though the body be dead, yet the spirit is alive and permanent. Nay, the perceptions may be keener when man's body is asleep. The flight may be higher. The hearing may be more acute. All the functions are there, and yet the body is at a standstill. Hence it is proof that there is a spirit in the man, and in this spirit there is no distinction as to whether the body be asleep or absolutely dead and dependent. The spirit is not incapacitated by these conditions. It is not bereft of its existence. It is not bereft of its perfections. The proofs are many, innumerable. These are all rational proofs. Nobody can refute them. We have shown that there is a spirit, and this spirit is permanent and everlasting. We must strive to learn of it. May you become informed of its power. Hasten to render it divine, to have it become sanctified and holy, and make it the very light of the world, illumining the East and the West.